So it's cool to be partnering today with Postnet on the pod. It's quite funny, you know, for years and years now, we haven't had a printer in the house. And very often we need printing, whether it's my keynotes or whether it's something for Dan for her, like her doctorate. And every time, Postnet comes to the rescue. And so I've actually been a very regular user of Postnet. And it just comes out that they've recently released a new service to the public, which is that you can get a credit report from them. So maybe you can tell us a bit more about that.
Firstly, before I tell you about the credit report, our friend Richard Mulholland works with Postnet and cannot speak highly enough about this company. They have super fans working there and super fans as clients as you and I are. So if you're ready to buy your dream car or put an offer in on a new house or even just take a personal loan, the best thing to do is to visit the Postnet now, because what they're able to do is give you a consolidated credit report from the four leading credit bureaus from South Africa. So for only 135 Rand, you can kind of take charge of your future and get a clear picture of what your financial position is and improving it. So why second guess your credit rating when you can be certain about it? So visit your nearest Postnet store today.
Hi, and welcome to The Expansive Podcast, a podcast that's all about helping you to expand your business, your mind, and just how you show up in the world. My name is Eric. I'm one half of The Expansive Podcast. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, co-pilot from all the way from Dubai, Mr. John Sane, drinking some black substance.
I'm going to tell you about it. It's very good.
Yeah,
very good.
What is that?
Yes. Yeah, you would think this would be coffee, right?
Yeah.
Well, not this early in the morning, and also not through,
well, you
not
never
through
know
this fancy
I'm
glass.
Just saying.
Yeah. So this is the amazing thing about living in Dubai, is that this is chaga, which is this mushroom that grows only in two places in the world, apparently. And this is wild chaga from the Siberian forest that has been crystallized into a powder, which you put into hot water. And apparently the benefits are mind-boggling, as we are understanding with these different mushrooms. So I usually have one coffee in the morning, a bulletproof coffee with ghee and with MCT oil. And then I then drink this. This is Siberian chaga mushrooms in a crystal form. So yeah, it's delicious. Yeah, it's really, and it's good for you.
And?
I mean, look at me, I'm glowing. What do you mean, and? Look at this. What are you talking about?
You've obviously just started taking it. The effects still need to get
this. I'm still in the pre, you know, like before those pre and post pictures on ads, before he lost weight and after he lost weight. I'm in the pre section. Yeah. Anyway, hello, everybody. Welcome to The Expansive this week. Wonderful to have you with us, and looking forward to this pod. We've got some really cool ideas and stories that we want to share with you. So yes, good morning to you, Eric. What's happening? Everything good there?
Yeah, all good, man. I've been meditating a hell of a lot, and it's been really good. And something that has slipped into my meditation practice also has been a new meditation that's come out.
Tell us about that.
It's an expected but unexpected source in some ways, because it's out of nowhere. Like, everyone is going to be very surprised by this. Even though I've been pushing for it for a long time, like, I've known it's been coming for a long time because I've been the instigator behind it, even though you might not even realize it. That silent voice just pushing it forward.
Oh, yes. Yes, so, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so the new meditation is by John Sane that I've been listening to. And dude, well done. I'm so happy that you finally put a meditation out into the world. It's such a compliment to the work that you do both on and off stage. So tell us about it. Tell us about what's the process been like. Tell us about the meditation. And also, for listeners just to know, we are going to be uploading an episode or the meditation to the podcast, so you can access it here on the pod, which is amazing. What an awesome little bonus for the expansive community. But then on top of that, we'll also link to your new newsletter so that people can sign up for the subsequent meditations that are also coming out. So tell us about it.
Yeah, thanks so much. Look, as your official meditation dealer, because I think I have sent you all Dr.
That's
Joe's
true,
meditations illegally.
Yes.
Dr. Joe, I love you so much, but my friend Eric's tight.
Listen, I've paid for many of those meditations.
Oh, have you?
Off the back of it. Yeah, okay, good.
Because Dr. Joe deserves them.
Energy transfer.
I think it's important to have energy transfers, to be honest.
But yes,
as your official meditation dealer. I've now, as all dealers, as all good dealers, eventually start making their own product because they see that. So look, you know, the years of meditation have really, and obviously I'm a huge Dr. Joe Dispenza fan and fanboy. And I love his meditations. I think he's leading the pack in the world of meditations. But by spending so many events with him and so many countless hours doing the meditations, I've also started to develop my own language and my own ideas of what I do in the meditations. And I think the best way for me to describe these meditations is that they're more granular in their approach to understanding big words like abundance or health, or these ideas, and to put yourself into a state of abundance sometimes is difficult because you don't have any sort of benchmark. And so what I've been doing within myself while I've been doing the meditation is creating language within myself that gives me better anchor points into how to show up in the meditations and how to create. And what I've done is I've brought that granular work into the meditation so that they can be more helpful, I think. Look, I don't, of course, Dr. Joe's incredibly helpful, not more helpful, differently helpful, I guess. That's a better way of saying it. And they're also in line with my new book, Future Memories, and a course that I'm putting together called Future Memories, and a writing workshop that I'm putting together called Memoirs from Your Future Self, all around future memories. And with this, I've launched a newsletter called Future Rise and a series of meditations. And the first one is now launched. And the series is a three-part process that has the bridge, which is what you have and what we'll be putting up online. It's a 15-minute meditation. The next will be The Adventurer, which will be a 30-minute meditation. And then we'll have The Jedi or Jedi Mode, which will be the 45-minute meditation. And each one of these meditations will do four simple things. They will, all of them, ask you to be very, very clear with the intention that you're trying to put out into the world. The second thing you'll be asked to do is to see yourself acting it out. So if you want to be on stage, you want to be traveling, you want to be married, you want to be whatever it is, see yourself acting on it with the people around you. Third is to release it into the ether, into the universe, and surrender yourself to it. And then fourth, to feel relief that it has already happened. As you go through the process of intention, action, surrender, and relief, you really are going through four of the most important reality-creating, future memory-establishing anchor points into developing those emotions as sort of benchmarks within yourself. That's the whole point of meditation, is can you replace your anxious ideas with more optimistic ideas? And when that starts to become a new pattern and a new behavior within you, then obviously your projection and the echo to reality starts to change. And so really the future memory meditation series, in fact, the whole future memory idea and concept is, can you make decisions based on where you're going rather than where you've come from? And that's the real, real thing, is that we are all making decisions based on where we've come from. And you and I have had this discussions just about earning money. And as South Africans who come from South Africa, we have a tendency to think about income based on South African rands and the market that we have experienced. And we cap ourselves to what is potentially available to earn internationally because of that cap. And so we do this in many ways, in what relationships we think we deserve, in what sort of body we deserve to have, what sort of income we're supposed to get, what sort of work are we supposed to attract, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so every time you do the meditation, you can have a different future memory that you can work on. And the bridge is initially free. It really is something that I want to be shared across the world. And then all the others will start to become paid for and behind pay gates. And then I'll be doing another one after that, which I'm really excited about, called $10 million. And $10 million is really based on what would it feel like if you had $10 million and you were arriving at a meeting. And so the truth is, it's not really about creating $10 million. It's about creating the emotional state of who you would be if you had $10 million. And I've gone through a process of playing that game myself, for myself, and coming up with the emotional states that would be brought up if you were carrying that sort of wealth behind you. And so these are all coming out. They're all playful. They're all soft and clear. They're simplified. in many ways, very different to Dr. Joe's ones. And I know the comparison would be made, and I'm very happy to have that comparison made. But once you listen to mine, you realize that they're not like Dr. Joe's. And I think being influenced by him is such a positive and a negative, because obviously my thinking becomes like him. And so I've also been very, very sensitive to not make it exactly like he is, because I don't want it to be just another Dr. Joe. And you've listened to obviously a lot of Dr. Joe's on this one, and you know it's different. So yeah, looking forward to people using it. I've already had some really positive feedback. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for your feedback as well. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Listen, so a few things. One is, from me listening to the meditation, I really enjoyed it. I thought initially, how would I feel meditating having John's voice in my head?
Don't have to say John like that, bro. Don't have to say John like that. Say it nicely. John's voice, not John's.
But that worked out well, because like it's your friend, like we speak often, but to be honest, like I have your voice in my head quite frequently, actually, because I'll often think about, because we speak so often and we've spoken about certain topics, I'll often think about something and like your voice kind of pops into my head as, you know, something you've said before or whatever. So that was actually fine. I like the 15 minutes time frame, because for most people entering into meditation, even 15 minutes already feels quite long, but I think it's the perfect introduction for people to get into it. And then I love the journey that people go on with this meditation. You know, often meditations are quite static. It feels like you're listening to the same droning music over the entire period. The voice is the same the entire way through, whereas the meditation here is very dynamic. It shifts you through how your voice is treated in post-production to the music that is being used. And I felt different sensations as I was going through it. And it really is a world-class production that you've put together. I mean, it really is comparable to the best stuff that is out there. And I think that's always where we end up. You know, we become an amalgamation of all the influences that we have. And the influences are clear, but it's definitely your unique expression of it. So it's very well done. And then two other things that I want to just quickly touch on. One is, with the $10 million meditation, you know, I've always thought, because money is often a big part of the meditation process. And I remember when I just started meditating, the feeling for me was always extreme excitement and extreme happiness when I'm manifesting a lot of money. And then over time, I've realized that even when I go into phase where I have a lot of money coming in, it's not that I'm all of a sudden just jumping around and super happy all the time. There's actually just something that kind of settles in me. And it's not extreme excitement. It is just, it's safety and it's comfort and it's confidence. And I think we often feel like it's going to be extreme abundance, extreme happiness. Mm. But that's actually not the emotional feeling to go looking for.
Yeah,
right?
It's not actually. Yeah. Look, there's, okay, so I'll tell you the four emotions that I've created in that meditation is to feel victorious, to feel safe, to feel confident, and to feel free.
Mm.
And yeah, if you think about those, are the really, really the emotions that we're looking for. We're looking for freedom and we're looking for safety. In fact, safety is, I think, maybe the most important emotion, because many of us don't feel safe. And then to add on to that victory, it's like you're victorious. Like, you know, you put your mind to something, you've created it, you've done it. You show up into meetings very differently with that energy. You know, it's like, it's a very different energy. You're not chasing. You're very relaxed. And that's the safety aspect of it, you know? And just to go back to talking about the changing sounds and the changing voices, and that was very, very intentional for me to take you through that journey into the four or five stages that I'm putting into the meditations. And I call them active meditations, because it's not about finding stillness. It's about actively rewiring. And that's really the genius of Dr. Joe, is that he took us past mindfulness into activity, into dynamic rewiring. And I think I'm just adding more granular energy into that sort of space. So yes, $10 million coming out. And I'm having so much fun with that one, because when people think about that, like $10 million, like it's so like, it's sort of cheap, you know, you're supposed to be spiritual.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, yeah. You're like, you're supposed to be real. Like it's real. Like you, every one of these spiritual people in like Bali and Tulum that are abundance coaches that are living in the second bedroom of a friend's house. You're like, dude, that's not what spirituality is about. Spirituality is about living in this full sort of like full expression of who you are, you know, and that can bring money. And look, I mean, and some people will say, oh, money is not important. I'm like, dude, it is important. Of course it's important. It is the currency that we've decided to trade energy with in this world, you know? So yes, $10 million is a fun poke at spirituality, but also really going down to the nitty gritty of what the emotional state is supposed to be or could be.
I have one last question for you, just because it is a granular meditation. And I know, you know, early on, you want as much guidance as you can with your meditation because you almost feel like, am I doing something wrong? Am I doing it right? And
right. Yes.
I think one question people might have is, how far into the future are you thinking about your future memories? You know, am I thinking about the goal that I want to achieve for this year? Am I trying to like envision my best life possible ever, you know, or like, what's the time frame that I think of when I'm thinking about my future memories?
That's a great question. And I think that it's really fluid. It's up to you. The only caveat I would give you is if you've got $100 in your account, don't think you're going to be a billionaire. So like be also, and I hate to use the word realistic, but be incrementally better than where you are. Incrementally. I also can't now think I'm going to be in a jet and I'm going to be president of America and a basketball player. I've also got to be realistic. It's like, look, I've also got to be realistic in the fact that I can stretch myself bit by bit, bit by bit, bit by bit, because my body has to believe it and my reality has to reflect it. The fact that I'm going to jump from $100 to $1 billion, I don't know. Maybe it can make sense. Not in my world. So what I would do is I wouldn't go too far into the future. I would play with things that are more practical in this sort of like in your vicinity to get fit with it. Because remember that everything in your reality is a projection. That's all it is. It's an echo and a projection. So if you can start to play around with small echoes and small projections, just to get fit. You know, you also, if you're going to be a mountain climber, you're not going straight for Everest. You're going to start with a small mountain and then a little bit more and then a little bit more. And that's exactly the thing you need to be doing here. Think about it with fitness. You're running a race. And so what race are you going to start with? A 5K race. You're not going to start with a marathon. It's the same thing here. It's like make it incremental, make it a process that becomes a practice that you start to stretch yourself little bit by little bit by little bit. And I think you and I have done that exceptionally well, is that we're slowly growing our brands, growing into new income streams, growing into new audiences, but we didn't jump straight into Las Vegas. This is really a process that we're going through. So yeah, it's a good question, but be incremental. I think that's really most important. Okay. And also you want to get a quick hit quickly. You want to get a short hit quickly. So play with something that's not too meaningful to you. Play with something that is playful so that it can really start to play with you and show you that these processes work.
Dude, amazing. Again, congratulations. Absolutely world-class. And I'm so happy that it's out in the world. And I'm happy that expansive listeners will be able to access it and that it's going to just elevate your brand as well in terms of the keynote that you deliver, because now there's also, you know, you talk about meditation a lot in your, yeah, there's like a tool that I go and use after I listen to you. So I love that. And just a reminder, the question is, can you make decisions based on where you are going versus where you have been? Such an awesome question to sit with.
Yeah. And most of us don't even know we are doing the initial one. We're actually doing the one that's where we've been, you know, like we don't even know we're doing that. Like that's the crazy thing about it. We're in repetition without knowing it.
So extending the theme of today's pod. So I was recently doing a meditation, and very often, like when you do these meditations, you sit in that vision for the future and it's kind of, you just like bathing in the feeling of it. And then sometimes you get these downloads that kind of happen. And I think I heard this thing the other day where the guy said, as you're meditating, like you're going to notice a lot of things and it's okay. Like you're not trying to change any of them actively. What you're trying to do is you're trying to find the space in between all those things. So you're trying to find the space in between the thoughts and the judging and the movement and the colors and the shapes and all these kind of things. And I think when you hit that space where there's just nothingness, I think that's when you get most of your downloads, most likely, like a bit of insight that just kind of bubbles up. And so I had one of these insights about 2 weeks ago, probably now. And it was about money. Surprise, surprise.
The theme of, $10 million. Expensive. We actually should, the expensive money show. Let's just call it the money show and get on with it.
and the download for me was that I need to become more of a custodian of money. And it was interesting because I've always had a very loose relationship with money, I guess, in a way. You know, growing up, we were like not wealthy, but also not poor, kind of somewhere in the middle. And
it's called middle class.
Called middle class, yeah. Because I could have just used that.
Amazing new term.
As I said that, I was like, there must be a phrase for that, you know, a description of that.
Or other words, average. I was average. I mean, I always explain, my mom used to shop at Checkers and Pick and Pay for cheaper vegetables. So we were kind of average-ish, lowish, average-ish, trying to save R4 on carrots. Yeah.
Okay. So we grew up in constraints, I guess. You know, my mom always had a budget that she worked with. And to me, at that point in time, budget meant lack. You know, like there's not enough to stretch. So you have to live within your means and live within your budget. And then things got much better. My mom became a doctor in psychology. Her practice was booming. We bought an Audi, you know, and even with that, there were still restraints. There were still budgets. My mom has always been that with her money.
Were you only allowed one cool drink at Spur? When were you allowed to have two cool drinks at Spur?
I can't remember when that – there was a time when that happened, but I can't remember when that was.
It's so funny for the listeners out there, that when Eric and I were talking about this off air, that was one of the points that we laughed at so much because we both had the same thing. It's like we were only allowed one cool drink and we like to have to savor that cool drink that whole way through, and we'd arrive before the meal. Halfway through the meal, you had no cool drink left. So now you're like, come on, I need another cool drink. Like, no.
And I remember my cousins, like you'd be with your cousins and they're ordering their second cool drink and you're like, geez.
That's
wrong. Must be the life.
Wrong. It's the business class of our kids' years. Yeah. Two cool drinks was business class. Yeah.
And so kind of weirdly, in a sense, I rebelled against this entire idea of budgets and constraints when it comes to money. And after varsity, I started making good cash, didn't have any responsibilities, and I never operate within my means. I've always been very loose in my spending. And I've spoken on the pod before how I'm quite impulsive with my buying. And this message for me was quite poignant because it reminded me that I need to look after my money in a better way. I need to actually care about my money. And not just, often when I spend my cash, I'll even think, oh, that's nothing. Like, oh, I'm buying this thing. Oh, but I look at the price, like, oh, that's nothing. And that's always the predominant thought. It's like, oh, it's nothing. And I realized that what I'm saying is like the money that I've worked for is nothing because I'm giving it away carelessly, recklessly in some sense. And so as I was doing this meditation, this phrase popped up, custodianship. Like you have to be a good custodian. And then when I sat with it a bit more and I've been doing some research about it and trying to understand it better for myself, what I found was that the word custodian comes from the Latin custodia, which means guarding or keeping watch. But there's a very deep implication of the word custodianship, which is that being a good custodian is not about possession. Being a good custodian is about care. And it's not about just protecting something. It's about nurturing it and ensuring that it ends up in a better shape than when you received it. And when you think about that idea, then, you know, we can apply custodianship across every aspect of our lives, really. Like you are the custodian of your health. You are the custodian of your money. You are the custodian of your relationships. I'm the custodian of Atlassi and Jaeger. And so it really shifts actually a lot more responsibility onto you. But it's responsibility to make sure that things end up better than they were before. But it also means like you should deeply care about the things that are in your life, which sounds like a kind of silly thing to say. But we have to remember that we are always patterned from when we were younger. And even though there might be some things that you know you should care about, for whatever reason, even just because you were rebellious at some point in your life, you know, if I look back at my mom's behavior, she cared about her money. She was a good custodian of her money. But back then, through the lens of a younger Eric, I didn't see it like that. I saw it purely as constraint and lack. And today, because of her good custodianship, she's in a good position because of that. But because I rebelled against it, I don't think I'm at the same level that she might be. And so you realize later on that, your rebellion actually, it was, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, like not
misplaced.
Misplaced. So I'm on a mission to be a better custodian of all things in my life, really. What are your thoughts? Jump in.
You know, so I love it. You know, whenever you have those downloads and you share them with me, they're always incredibly wise and pertinent. And often so simple. Aren't the biggest, best teachings just simple? Like, you know, if it's too complex, it's so simple. And when you've said it to me, it also impacted me deeply. And, you know, the idea of being stingy, what's connected to custodianship in my world. And also coming from a average family, having money meant no budgets and be wild. And in fact, what that was is disrespect in many ways. And when I used to work with my money coach, she used to always say money needs intention and container. You need to tell it what you want to do with it and where it needs to go for you. And that is exactly the opposite of respect and that is the exact opposite of disrespect and being frivolous. But the idea of custodianship, obviously with money, is really important. And it just gets you to realize that you can be respectful to what you're doing with it and adding some level of intentionality to it. But then I think about custodianship of showing up in life as a custodian. Nah, that's it. Full stop. And a very good friend of mine, Manish, if you're listening, love you, bro. Manish always does this thing where he leaves these guest houses that he stays at and Airbnbs in a better condition than he found it. And I was like, I always clean up, like when the cleaners come in, and in fact, all of his Airbnb responses are, I think our house was cleaner after Manish left, you know? And that application is you being a custodian of everything that you come into contact with. And you said it, like your body, like what are you putting in your body? How are you treating your body? Are you really clear about it having the right pH balance, the right acidity, magnesium? Just by the way, caveat, I've been taking magnesium powder. Jeez, crikey, I highly recommend it. Oh, I highly recommend it. I think we are all incredibly low in magnesium and electrolytes. And so I've been doing a mix of glutamine, alkaline powder, and magnesium together every third day. Wow, what a major difference. Anyway, the custodianship. And I think I also mentioned it in the networking work, a masterclass that I did, is arrive into a conversation as a host. And another way of saying custodianship is host. Like, how are you hosting the people in your life? How are you hosting the world that you engage with? Are you always coming in the caring way rather than being somebody that's petulant and focused on yourself and kind of just being quite selfish about the things, you know, and frivolous in many ways? And so the idea of custodianship is really just an idea of an evolved human being showing up into every aspect of their lives. And I've got three examples that I was thinking about custodianship. And the first one is called the seventh principle or the seventh generation principle. And it comes from the Native Americans. Talk about wisdom. And they would plan out things based on how would the seventh generation of me experience this reality. And I remember a while back in Japanese national or local politics, they would get together a city or a town and give the town two options. Do we do short-term planning or do we do long-term planning? And there would be a vote, and always it would come out with long-term planning. And I think what's happened is that we get so caught up in selfishness and survival mode based on a high beta brainwave and following patterns from your past, not your future. You get into the state of being short-termism. And the industrial revolution has perpetuated this, and Wall Street has created a short-term expectation on many things. And in my second book, I called it the horny teenage boy syndrome. And this horny teenage boy syndrome is exactly the opposite of being a custodian. You're very short-term in your thinking. The second example was Patagonia, where the owner, Von Schoenaert, I never can get the name right, he put all the shares into a trust that is focused on uplifting earth and nature and a custodian of the earth. And the third one is a Japanese, it's called the 1,400 Temple Builders. And it's about this idea that you are building temples and cathedrals. And these things take multiple generations to build. They are not one generation. In fact, they're not decades long. They're generations long. And if you think about these three principles, the one from the Native Americans, the one from the Japanese, and the one from what Patagonia has done, these are all beautifully elegant, beautifully wise, beautifully long-term. And even when we think about them, you can take a sigh, like it's almost got a deep sigh of going like, I'm in symbiosis with what the world requires for me and how I show up with it. And that is just such a beautiful, elegant, powerful way to show up as a custodian to everything you engage with. So I think it's such an important topic. Yeah. And such a beautiful word, in fact. Be a custodian. Just be a custodian.
It is beautiful.
It's so simple. Yeah.
I actually think a shortcut for custodianship is... When Dan and I had our anniversary recently, I shared a quote that said, the highest form of love is consideration. And I actually think if you follow that as a principle, then you can't not be a great custodian, because custodianship then means that I'm considering the things and the people around me, that you have consideration for the money, that you have consideration for your health, that you have consideration for the people around you. And if you can just get that right, like, you automatically become a good custodian. There's no way that you can't. Because that's all, it's all outward focused. And the moment that your focus shifts too much inward, then I think you become a poor custodian. And you might engage in that short-termism that you just spoke about.
You know, Eric, it's all got to do with your brainwaves, bro. It's, you know, when you're in a high beta brainwave, you're not a custodian. When you're in an alpha brainwave, you're a natural custodian. It's like, it's so weird because we always think to ourselves, how do I become better at this? Or how do I evolve into this type of person? Actually, all you have to do is change your brainwaves. it's so ridiculous, because we used to always think that you have to go healing and you have to evolve and you have to, no, bro, you just have to change your brainwaves into an alpha brainwave in that calm state, open heart. Everything seems obvious, you know? And I even know this theory, and I also go through my fluttering, and then I do a meditation and come out on the other side. I'm like, okay. I'm back. I'm back into heart-centeredness, you know?
All right. So that's custodianship. It's definitely something that I'm very actively working on in becoming better. And it's always so good to have these anchor points to know that these are the things that we need to be actively pursuing in how we show up. Do we have time for one more? What do you think?
Yes. We do have time for one more.
All right. So I'll share one more idea that I had, which came from a wedding that I attended. There's sort of two in one, so I'll share both. The first one was, I was sitting at this wedding, and the person getting married was actually divorced before. And like quite a long time ago. I think the divorce happened 20 years before this next marriage that they're now taking on. And I was sitting there, and for a brief moment, there was like this bit of cynicism that popped up. And because as we're doing their vows, and I thought, you are currently making the exact same vows that you made 20 years ago. The exact same vows that said, I'm going to love you forever. My heart is yours. Till death do us part. You were making the ultimate commitment to this other person. And yet here we are 20 years later, and that didn't pan out as well. Like you didn't live into the vows that you made. But it was only for a very short amount of time. That cynicism popped up for a few seconds. And then I caught myself and I realized that it's actually not about what happened in the past. That this person was just doing their best. And that they were doing their best back then, and that they are doing their best right now in this moment. And I've always had this bit of a thing where I'm a bit judgmental about myself. And I've not realized how that extends to the people around me as well often. And, you know, through a lot of internal work in December last year, I've really moved past that and I've really softened into the judgment that I have about myself. And so in that moment, I realized two things. I realized, number one, that I've softened judgment about myself and therefore I've also softened judgment about others. That it's okay. That whatever state you are in now is also just a passing state. And whether that's good or bad, you know, and the intention or the assumption has to be that people are always working towards better, you know, and that you are showing up in this moment, trying to do your best. No one goes and stands in front of an altar and makes these vows with the intention of breaking them. So like when you are there, I have to believe that you are doing your best. And if it didn't work out well, then that's unfortunate and these things happen. And if you go and do it again, then it's not about being cynical about you doing it again. It's that you are trying again. You've stood up again and you are giving it your best shot again. So it was kind of a two-in-one of realizing that you have to kind of hold yourself softly and gently and kindly, and that you have to extend that to others as well. And in coaching, there's this thing that says you have to assume unconditional positive regard. And I think it's good to extend that to others, to really see that whatever situation they might be in, they're trying their best. And I actually think a lot of this I also picked up from you, because at some point you were also really working on extending that generosity and that kindness to your younger self. And I remember you saying like, oh, like, you know, John at the time, like with his money and his BMWs, like he was just doing the best he could in that moment in time. And I think it's such what a wonderful thing to be able to extend to your younger self, but then also to the people around you when you might rather replace cynicism with kindness, softness, non-judgment. Softness. Yes.
Yeah, beautiful reflection. I mean, Eric, I think that the fact that you caught yourself is the real key there. Whereas you would have spent your time judging it throughout the wedding and in fact could have ruined the wedding for you. And you had a really good time because you realized that it was you that was creating that idea of perfectionism. And you're also very lucky that you have also got a relationship that's so solid. You know, you've got a very solid relationship. And I think other people don't have that. I haven't had that, you know, so it's a challenge for me. So to have that projection of perfectionism on people really is your own projection of your perfectionism requirement on yourself, as you have now discovered, and also that you've caught yourself in the process. In fact, the guy inside me that judges, his name's Grizzly, and Grizzly is the judgerer, and he's not around that much anymore. But when I do feel like sometimes he pops up, I'm like, no. We don't need to be judging anybody. It's just the way it is. It's softness is the real key. So you are really good. I think to catch our patterns and catch our behaviors is the real key. And that's all it is. It's really about finding it, switching it. Finding it, awareness of it, switching it. And that really, what you're actually doing there, Eric, is rewiring. You're literally rewiring your brain. Literally. Not figuratively. Literally. And so well done to you. I'm very happy for you. And also, I'm sure you'll think about that person who got married in a much fonder light as well. Not in a quiet judgment. Yeah.
Last thing I want to share, which also comes from the wedding, was, you know, obviously at some point in time, everyone is doing best man and maid of honor speeches. And it's always so touching to listen to these speeches. And, you know, everyone was standing up and giving their talks. And Dan was the maid of honor. So she also had her time as well on the mic. And when she was delivering her talk, I was watching her and I was watching the bride. And she spoke through three experiences they've had, three stories they've shared, and how those stories impacted Danica's life. And I was watching this bride and she was in tears. And you could just see that it really meant so much for her to hear these words. And I thought, why do we wait? Why do we always wait for these big occasions to tell the people that are in our lives how much they've impacted us or how much we care about them or what they mean to us? And even this morning, as I was thinking about our session today, my thoughts were like, screw your eulogy, because that's what you save it for. You know, if you don't have the big wedding, then when is the time that you're going to talk about someone in a beautiful, fond, poetic, almost kind of way? It's going to be when they are dead and you are standing over their coffin and you are speaking to everyone, telling them how amazing this person was, but you never use those same words for the person who's now lying in that coffin. And so maybe a bit of a call to action, actually, and something that I want to personally do is, like, go write that best man speech or that maid of honor speech that you would give to someone if you were in that position. Go write it and then go read it to them. Don't wait until, because there's never going to be, like, when is the next wedding? You know, maybe if there's a divorce again and there's another marriage, sure, another wedding. But apart from that, like, when do we do this, you know? So don't wait for the big occasion. Go write out those three stories. Go write out how someone has impacted you, what they mean to you. Write them a letter. And then don't send them the letter. Go read them the letter. That's my call to action for all of us for today.
Yeah, that was very good. I love that. I mean, you've shared that with me privately, and it also impacted me and made me go and write a couple letters. So yeah, beautiful reflection points about being custodianships of our futures and to be more mindful of our judging and to be deeper in our sharing of, and I think all three of those are actually very linked. You know, when you show up as a custodian, there's a softness and an acceptance and a kindness and a benefit of the doubt. And then to be able to put that energy into appreciating somebody really is quite easy when you come from a space of custodianship. It's very difficult when you're coming from a place of triggeredness or a place of self-involvement and feeling that the world is against you in some way, you know. And yeah, really great. I think what a great flow and what a great a link into all three messages. And I think there's a nice theme there for you, Eric, is, you know, that idea that you got this download of custodianship and catching yourself judging and giving the benefit of the doubt. It's just beautiful. Nice to see you going through such a evolution in your approach as well. So also stop for a second and maybe write yourself a letter.
Yeah. Good idea. Yeah, it's cathartic, man. Progress requires that we struggle with some things, that we deal with the patterns that we've had in the past. And it's not easy to confront them. It's not easy to change them. And it's not easy to be vulnerable about them and share them on stages like we are doing, you know, and the podcast, for example. But this is also part of the commitment that we've made, is that we want to be more vulnerable on the pod this year. We want to share more of our own journey and our own experiences, because it is easy to look at the Instagram picture and the keynote speakers on stage and think that, oh, everything is just perfect all the time, and that there's no deep growth and struggle that needs to go with that. So thank you. And listen, to everyone who's tuned in, thank you for joining us on this journey. Thank you for growing with us and learning with us. And make sure that you go and check out the pod. It'll be uploaded probably, let's try and upload it following this episode, because I think it's a nice preamble to the meditation. So go have a listen to the meditation, do the meditation more importantly, and then join the Futurize newsletter that John is putting out. We will put a link to that in the show notes, so that you can also get access to not only the newsletter, which is very valuable, but also the additional meditations that are coming out. Dude, any sort of closing thoughts from your side?
No, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful pod, and I feel very at peace and elevated in my energy because of it. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, and thank you so much for sharing my meditations and newsletter. And I look forward to our next pod already.
Amazing. Thank you. And to all our listeners, you can check us out on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube. We'd love for you to leave us a review on iTunes. We always read them and share them between ourselves and We always feel very happy when that sort of feedback comes through. So if you are so inclined, leave us a review. And otherwise, until next week, be expansive.